Hey there, Legal Tea listeners. This is your host, Jenny Roselle. Today's episode of Legal Tea is a cautionary tales topic, and on these episodes, we normally talk about real-life cases with real-life clients that are things me or my office have actually worked on. Or they are things that I think are just generally good things to be aware of so that you, my friend, do not turn into a cautionary tale on this podcast one day. Today's episode is a little bit of both, honestly, because we are going to talk about a real-life story where someone died, their sibling stepped up to be the executor, and she ended up having to navigate some really not fun things. Thankfully, she had us on her side and helping her, but even though she had great counseling, it still wasn't fun for her. Granted, it's never fun to serve in that role, but her role was honestly made extra difficult because her brother left things in a really messy state. So we're going to talk about what happened in this particular case and then what you can also do and focus on to set your executor up for better success. So let's dive in. Let's start with Bob. So Bob created a really basic will in 2018. Through his estate planning process, he was going back and forth between a will and a trust, and ultimately he decided to do a will. Fast forward to today, I wonder how that would have changed things, and we'll briefly touch on that in a few minutes. So like I said, back in 2018, he created a last will and testament, and he wanted his sister Sally to be the executor, and he even wanted his assets and his estate to go to Sally. When I was reviewing things for this episode, I saw a note that we had put in our database that said something about Bob wanting Sally to get everything and have her distribute things asset-wise as she sees fits, or as she sees fit, and that was very much against our recommendation. Side note, I cannot legitimately sit here and say that that's ever a good idea. And that's probably why there was a note in our system basically saying like, hey, if this ever bites us, we have our notes that we, you know, recommended against this. So anyway, fast forward time, Bob ended up passing away about 5 years later after he got his will done. We bring in his sister Sally to start discussing next steps in the process. And well, because he didn't do a trust, we had to go through the probate court process for his will. At this meeting with Sally, she shared that she had been keeping an eye on his mail and email, and it seemed that Bob left many, many debts, from credit cards to IRS debt to HOA dues, and some of the creditors had actually filed liens on his house. In addition to this debt, Bob was also on Medicaid, and Sally didn't even know. Well, imagine Sally's surprise when she learned that Medicaid filed a claim on Bob's estate for a pretty substantial amount of money. Needless to say, Sally had her hands full. At one point, we thought the estate actually may turn into an insolvent estate, which basically means that the debt would consume the value of the estate. So this is a perfect example of Sally really needing someone like us on her side, because if the estate is insolvent, there is a very specific priority order in which creditors are to be paid. Like those with higher priority get paid first over those with lower priority. If it's truly insolvent, it's possible that you may pay one of those lower priority creditors when you shouldn't. And then that's not good at all, because those higher priority creditors are going to be really grumpy with you as executor and possibly even seek recourse. So yeah, it's really important to not start paying things when you don't even know, one, how many debts are out there, and two, what kind of assets are out there. So here with Sally, we specifically instructed her to not pay anything until we got a better grasp on all the debts. We finally reached that moment of understanding what debts were out there, and we started guiding her on the creditor priority order. So I'm going to quickly spout off the priority order that we have here in Indiana. And if you're a new Legal Tea listener, this podcast is based out of the state of Indiana. So when I have an opportunity to kind of drop some Indiana-specific stuff, I do. So do know that, too. If you're an out-of-state listener, your priority list or order may be different. It may be the same. So back to this priority list. First and foremost is the costs and expenses of administration. And which, by the way, yes, is a really objective thing, hence why an attorney is really important through this process. After costs and administration, is reasonable funeral and body disposition expenses. But there are some limitations imposed if the person was on various governmental benefits. Next in the order of priority are spousal elections and family allowances. And that's like an episode for another day of what those mean. Then in the priority order is debts and taxes that have, quote, preferential, you know, treatment. So think like secured loans, like a mortgage or a car loan. Then it's medical expenses of the last sickness of the decedent. And finally, it's kind of the everything else. So think unsecured debt, credit cards, that sort of thing. So as you may be able to see now, sometimes in estates after someone has passed away, there's a bit of a strategy dealing with debts and creditors. Here with Bob's estate, we were thinking that that may be a path that we have to go down. So that's exactly, like I said, why we instructed her to not pay anything until we figured out everything debt-wise out there. Granted, that made some third parties like the funeral home a bit grumpy, but at the end of the day, Sally, the executor, is our client, and we have to make sure she is following the law. And guess what, funeral home? You're not on top of the priority list. Sally finally got to a point where she was able to get a handle on Bob's assets. And we discovered that once she sold the house, that there would be an excess of assets over debts. So yay, it's not an insolvent estate. Nonetheless, while that is true, it has still created massive stress on Sally because the debts and creditors were really painful to deal with. They wanted paid, and they would blow all of our phones up. But as soon as we were ready to get the house sold, which had liens on it due to some of the creditors, like I said, there were four or five lien holders that absolutely dragged their feet on telling the title company where to send the check to for their payment. So a little bit about how that works. When the sale happens, before the estate gets the money, the title company pays off those lien holders, and then the remaining balance after the liens goes to the estate. So the title company was not able to really do much or move on the transaction, on the closing, because the lien holders would not call them back. I think they ended up having to push the closing like two or three times, which again caused Sally immense amount of stress since she kept having to tell the other creditors that were impatiently waiting to get paid after the sale of the house that they would get paid once the closing was over. So finally, after what was an absolutely inappropriate amount of time for those lien holders to get a hold of the title company, the transaction finally closed and the estate got the remaining funds after the liens were paid off. So Sally had the money at that point to pay off the remaining debts. Through all of that, some of the creditors that did not put a lien on Bob's house, but were very much still creditors nonetheless, put claims on the actual court record, which is really normal and allowable thing to do. Well, we ended up having basically the same exact experience with them. Sally paid off those creditors and debts too. Annoyingly, the creditor has to file something with the court to say like, hey, we're paid, we're good over here. Well, they got paid and then conveniently took forever to file their release. I don't know if they were like, hey, since you guys took forever to pay us, we're going to take forever to release the claim with the court. I don't know if that actually, who knows, probably not true. But what I will say is that Bob, had Bob done a trust, honestly, A trust, so long as the assets were appropriately titled in the trust, avoids this whole probate court process. Therefore, while we would have had to still deal with the liens on the house, their creditors filing all these claims on this estate, like through the court, would not have happened because the court is not involved. So had Bob done a trust those years ago in 2018, he could have saved his estate legal fees, but also made Sally's life less stressful dealing with all of these debts. You know, I think a big take-home point from this episode is that, you know, what really would have benefited Sally was an organized list of assets and debts, because it took Sally forever to uncover everything debt-wise and asset-wise that was out there. So not only did she have to deal with all the craziness of the debts, before we even dealt with those, she had to figure out what was even out there from an asset and debt standpoint. He had a house, of course, but it was like kind of trying to find like a needle in a haystack with what bank accounts he had, investments he had, life insurance he had, what beneficiaries were all on there. And granted, in Bob's defense, Sally thinks that when he got sick, he sort of let everything fly out of control and he just kind of stopped paying things. I've honestly seen that happen before, so she may very well be right. But even if he had created an organized list when he was feeling fine, when he had done his will in 2018, at least that would have helped Sally and helped us immensely. So when you do your estate plan, you will probably get some sort of folder or binder that holds all of your documents. And you know, I always tell clients to use it as a safe place to hold important things. So some clients will put together like a listing of assets and debts, which would have saved us a lot of trouble and headache in this case. Some clients will take pictures of items that they want to go to specific people. Some clients will list out passwords and codes that are important. So you think like email account passwords, and they'll store all this stuff in their folder or in their binder. What Bob did not do was set Sally up for success. And in fact, while he did not certainly do it intentionally, Bob actually set Sally up essentially for failure. And it was because Sally had someone like me involved that was the saving grace, that, you know, she could have absolutely just, you know, gone through this and not had any legal guidance. And that would have been really, really problematic. If there's anything I hear all the time from clients, it's that they just want to make things easy on their family and their executor. Well, learn here from Bob. Bob did not make things easy at all on Sally. Alrighty, my friends, let's wrap up this episode. Let's shift to a sneak peek of next week, which we are circling back to the current trends topic, where we talk about things that are currently going on in my, you know, estate and elder law world. Or maybe there are things I've just stumbled across on the news or social media that's relevant to this podcast. Well, next week, it's going to be a fun one. We're going to talk about a guy named Mark Rosler who represents, are you ready for this? Dead celebrities. He is a publicist by trade, and he actually calls dead celebrities delebrities. So what he does is represent these dead celebrities in various matters. And as Forbes says in the article that really inspired this next episode, as Forbes says, being dead doesn't necessarily mean being unprofitable. And that's true when you think about it. They even say that some dead celebrities or delebrities are worth more now than when they were living. So tune in for that next time. And until then, be well and talk soon.